It's a good 10 minutes, and we have some eliminations to talk about. Well, really, just one team on a Friday, but we'll get to two of the series from last night. Not a ton of time to be spent on the Knicks Atlanta. My God. So we start in Minnesota, where they have taken out the Denver Nuggets. And this is a lesson in toughness. This is a lesson in belief. The toughness that Minnesota Timberwolves have shown through this series, and then to go in this undermanned in an elimination game, and you're like, all right, well, I think Denver might win this series. We figured they were going to get game five at home. They did. They ran away with it. Granted, Minnesota made a late push there to cut it, I think, to 10, and then it was like another 9 straight points for Denver, and you're like, that game's over. So you're going into game six. And you're like, all right, so Ant's been out. DiVincenzo's out. And Io's out, who goes for 40-plus in a heroic game in Minnesota. You're like, well, what are they going to do tonight? How are they going to do this? And they did it again. And they did it with toughness. And I want to get into a lot of the stuff here. Murray's overall series was not great. And I know everybody wants me to lead with Jokic and say that he sucks now. I'm not going to do that. I'm sorry. He didn't have a good series, though, at all. It's the worst playoff series of his entire playoff career. And we'll get to some of those numbers. Murray, 4-17 last night. He had a stretch, I think it was 11 straight misses. He just couldn't get free of Jaden McDaniels. Everything for him was tough. I think there's a few good looks, but, you know, I talked about some of the quarters in this series where they overwhelmingly favored Minnesota. I think there was that one stretch where I looked at 23 shots in a quarter from Denver, and I thought like one or two were actually like easy looks. This Minnesota team just found a way to defend all the time. I also figured if they were going to go with Rudy, Nas, and Randall in a lineup, that it'd be a lot of like Randall and switches against smaller players. And that's something we saw. You know, he'd get some nice, you know, he gets that mid post, but he still can work from there and get closer to the hoop. It's not like he stops once he starts his post up, meaning once you start to post, that's likely where the shot is going to come from. But then it turns into this Jaden McDaniels game where I'm like, okay, this is a completely different dude. I mean, McDaniel, now I look at differently after years of kind of being like, yeah, I guess he's all right, but I also have games where I don't even notice him. And then there's the Terrence Shannon part of this, TJ Shannon, who, if you watch him in college, you're like, he's a bucket. He's one of the most ready-made NBA scorers in the entire draft, but he's older and he's a wing, and we're not sure if he's going to shoot it all that well. I mean, this is unbelievable. So Murray on the series last night, disaster, 35% from the floor, 26% from three. McDaniel goes for 32 and closed out the game. Like unstoppable stuff. Dribble, pull up. I've got this possession. It wasn't just getting at the rim relentlessly. He was fantastic. And I really would have thought if you had said, hey, Denver, Minnesota is going to be in a tight playoff game, and then Jaden McDaniel is going to be the guy that's going to have to close it out offensively, I'd be like, well, then Minnesota's going to lose. So I just didn't think that he had this level, this ceiling in him. But sometimes when it's necessity and there's no one else out there and you know it's only you, that's actually a great confidence booster. Even Kyle Anderson was out of this game last night. Just at least somebody you figure you can roll out there for 15 minutes and have the basketball. Terrence Shannon had 24. Might want to pick that guy up. He is so fast. And there was a stretch where he's going off and he was the leading scorer of the entire game into the third quarter. And so if you look at some of the stat part of this, Minnesota didn't light it. This isn't some three-point shooting variance thing where they lit it up from three and Denver sucked from three. Minnesota shot in the 20s from three, but they're plus 17 on the rebounding side. So that's one part of it. And here's the most ridiculous number. Like you're thinking McDaniel, Bones, Shannon, Conley, who's kind of unplayable, and you're running all these guys out there and you have only 7 turnovers in a game that's this intense, that's this meaningful. And they took 94 shots to Denver 75 with the extra rebounds, with the lack of turnovers. And so the shot margin, when you just look at that number in itself, you're like, okay, well, there's no way the other team could win. Jokic, he's going to have this on his resume. And it'll either be a blip if he has success, which I'd still imagine. He's 31 in February here. I don't think I'm quite ready to write the guy off. But it's on the resume as the worst playoff series of his entire career, as I alluded to. If you look at the advanced stuff, it's the worst. I mean, it's off a cliff. It's also part of like a 2-year decline a little bit, which, you know, there's a number there over 2 years. And again, you just like, if I'm putting all the advanced analytics together here, there's a stretch for 2 years where it's the 22 and 23. Let me say that again. It's so 25 and 26, 23 and 24, his 2 years together. It's like the best player in the NBA in the playoffs, right? Doesn't mean he's going to win back-to-back titles, right? But he has the one title in there in 23, bounced out in 24. But still clearly like the efficiency and everything that he's doing is the best player. A bit of a dip last year. And now this year, just a different guy if you were just to look at that. Even if you look at some of the plus-minus stuff on the court, off the court, there's a 3-year stretch where he's between plus 22 or plus 19 for the entire playoff season. All right. Some of that is Denver's bench. And yet this Denver bench, although no Gordon, you know, you could sit here if you're a Denver fan and say, yeah, hey, we didn't have Gordon and the game he played in, he was limited in the last one. And we didn't have Watson. Well, do you want to play that game with the other team? Because like you can't. All right. When you have Jokic, you're supposed to win this series when that team is missing their guys. And so over that stretch, the plus on-off stuff is otherworldly as expected, and he still was plus 13 on-off for this series as well. So I don't know, like, you know me. I'm a Jokic fan. I think he's incredible. But, you know, I'm not going to have this, like, completely derail what I think of the guy. It's also another reason why we do the top 10 player exercise before the playoffs, because they'll now be like a hangover. Like if SGA were to get another one back-to-back, I think most of the national people are going to go into, especially when SGA wins back-to-back MVPs, which I think he's going to, and I did vote for him. There'll be a push that like, there's not going to be a lot of people still saying that Jokic is the best player in the world, because you're just not supposed to do that after you have this kind of series and you've been getting bounced out in this case, the first and second round last year. And that's fine. But if you map it out, and there's a pretty simple way of going like, well, when's that next great Jokic run coming? Because what OKC is doing and what San Antonio is likely to do here over the next however many years, you could say, well, he's just going to get boxed out of the West anyway. So this is now part of the decline. I'm not there. And I think to just assume the same way, if you were looking at OKC, you'd be like, oh, they're just going to win the next 5 NBA championships. It's like, that just doesn't really happen. Doesn't happen. Either people get hurt, something else happens. It doesn't look great, though. Like, it's a very fair argument to say, well, with OKC and San Antonio, like, how is he going to erase this? Where's that NBA Finals run? But I think that's just assuming a lot of stuff that's going to happen with everything that's going on around you for multiple years. And that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that you can make in sports. But from a toughness standpoint, you know, Finch and this group responding the way that they did, JD McDaniels backing up everything that he said. There's a play with Terrence Shannon where it's 101-97 in the fourth quarter, and you're still thinking Denver's going to pull this thing out. Right? And you can get into like Jokic having 9 points in the first half. He had 19 in the second half. I thought he was terrific last night. So I don't really know that it's about that. It's just kind of the headline of like Jokic doesn't get past this team that's missing all these guys. But to this Shannon play, to like speak to the belief, at least for a night from this Minnesota group, 101-97, it's late. They run 5 out and Shannon's dribbling forever. And I'm like, they're going to just let him go? Like, he's just going to go? This is, you know, at that moment, the biggest possession of the game. Like, and Terrence Shannon's in charge of this possession and right to the hoop. Unbelievable. Tons of respect for that Minnesota group. Philadelphia. Maybe this is what it's supposed to look like. When you're like, yeah, this is the design. You're still not getting like the full Embiid, but it's a hell of a lot better than the first game that Embiid played. And even that first half in game 5, but the second half of game 5 and now game 6, like it's an issue. And he's not even hitting his threes, which eventually he's probably going to hit enough to keep you honest if Philadelphia gets to extend their playoff lives. Because I'm telling you right now, I have no idea what to expect in game 7. Game 5, I thought Boston would take him out. They are just brutal to end the game. They go into last night. I thought that they were making a concerted effort to attack Embiid defensively, which is something that I think they got away from in that fourth quarter of game 5. And then the shots, I thought they had some really nice looks. Boston did in that first quarter. but missed a lot of easy ones. I mean, Derek White had a 4-minute stretch to start the game where he missed two really easy shots. He had an awful turnover. Then he had another turnover where he kind of fell down. And I don't know if he was pushed or not, but they basically called him for a double dribble. So he finally hit some threes to feel a little bit better about that. But when you look at what Paul George has done, who's now shooting at the best in this playoff series. And again, when I say playoff season, it's just the entire stretch of however many games you've played. But Paul George has played in 120 playoff games. In this series, this is the best that he's ever shot the basketball. So you're like, oh, Paul George is just back. And Embiid is somebody you actually have to worry about. And Maxey, who was getting like fringe top 10 votes when I was doing that exercise with all the coaches and the NBA front office guys, were like, Maxey's name was coming up. And VJ, who is entirely unafraid. Like, he may have a bad shooting night, but I don't look at VJ as somebody who's just going to like lose his confidence just because he's a rookie because he had a bad previous game. You want a funny footnote? After game 4, because I bought a Moses Malone jersey from NBA.com years and years ago, I somehow get every single Sixers update. NBA.com sent me an email saying all Sixers gear was on sale. After, I was like, that's kind of mean. I got another one this morning that said there's plenty of Sixers stuff available, but it didn't say that it was on sale anymore. So I don't know if they took the stuff off sale because now this thing is tied up at 3 games apiece. And like I said, I have no idea what to expect in game 7, which I think there's a fair segment to do about Boston, which I wouldn't do it because I'm just not sure that I believe it. But like, let's just bring it up. If you're Boston going into this year with Tatum out, where you imagine it's the entire year that he's going to be out, it was actually a financial blessing for this new ownership group because they didn't have to go to the fan base and say, well, we're breaking this team up so we can save a ton of money, even though we just bought it, because the luxury tax bill is absurd. And I wouldn't have blamed any NBA owner, even after winning an NBA championship, being like, can we move some of the salary out of here? So I'm fine with that. But if you want to be like a dick about it, and I'm not doing that, you could say, well, Celtics did this to themselves. You lose 3 centers. You turn Drew Holiday into a pick, but Simons, who you turn into Vooch, who nobody really wanted. Like, you were that desperate for any kind of center help, because as great as Kata's story is, and it's a great story, he's going to be a rotational player in the NBA for a really long time, but he's a backup on a playoff team, and you're seeing that. So now you're looking at Boston, where I guess I'm fighting against somebody who's really pro-Boston that would say, well, you know, they actually like this roster, because you're still sitting there as the series starts going, whatever they've done this year in preparation of this roster build, it worked in the regular season to a degree where Mazzulla's going to win Coach of the Year. I voted him Coach of the Year. And then you get Tatum back, and every single odds maker is telling you Boston's the favorite to come out of the East, which may speak more to how the rest of the East looks, which I think is fine because I guess everybody likes the Knicks now. That Knicks game, by the way, I was rooting for OG Anunoby to have more points at the half than Atlanta. I don't know, and I don't know that this is hyperbole, because Atlanta was that atrocious in that game. And credit to the Knicks defense that just decided to play at a level that's not sustainable for that long. And the Knicks did all those things. But I don't know that I'll have to remember this Atlanta game for a long time the next time I have the same thought, where Atlanta had bad possessions for what felt like an hour straight. Just an hour straight of all of these possessions are terrible. When I was watching the Minnesota-Denver game, I still had on the TV NBC up because I wanted to watch Mazzulla's postgame presser. So it re-aired the Atlanta game. I should call it the New York game, but it was re-airing that feed. And when I looked up again, even though I had just watched the game and saw that it was 76-24, I thought something was wrong, even though I had just lived through it and watched it. So congrats to the Knicks. Now everybody's favorite because of the momentum, because you're like, what's going on with Detroit? What's going on with Boston? Am I supposed to like Philly here? And is Cleveland going to go back 3-3 against Toronto? So it's been a lot of fun, but collectively the conference has felt unimpressive, because I think any of these teams to get out are going to get destroyed by OKC. I think it's going to be ugly. All right. So that's my little Atlanta, New York thing. So back to Philadelphia, and this Boston part of it is that I do wonder if Boston were to lose game 7, if they'll be like, well, hey, this really wasn't like, you start hearing gap year all over again. And I'm wondering, like, well, yeah, but if it's this version of Philadelphia, it's this version of Paul George. an Embiid who's going to get all your centers into foul trouble. There was also something in the game last night where I was looking at the Cade minutes going, shouldn't Cade be matching Embiid this entire time? But maybe they're so afraid early in the game of having Cade out there against Embiid that they didn't want him to get in foul trouble. They're going to save those minutes later. There's also an argument to be made that they want Vooch in some of those matchup minutes against Embiid, even though he's less defensively, to try to stretch Embiid out there a little bit. So I do wonder if like that roster part of it will come up as some sort of an excuse if Boston is eliminated. And maybe it's not necessarily a terrible excuse, but at the same time, like I'm going into game seven going, well, do you think Boston is supposed to win? And now I don't even know. I don't know. Because I'll admit, this has been a group for like 4 years. And they make it to a finals 4 years ago. They win the finals 2 years ago. So to argue against the proof of concept seems pretty stupid, but I still might do it. When I watch Boston play in the regular season, to see them struggle like they do offensively, and it just feels so dead. Like they're not a great watch. They ran a play for Derek White where it was like a great out of timeout thing that Mazzulla ran that got him a really nice look in the third quarter. And then it's like Derek White came down and goes, well, I just made a three, so now I'll take a really tough contested one, even though it's early, because like this is what we do. And what they do when it looks bad, it just kind of goes like, you guys are never going to stop doing any of this stuff. No one's going to fight back. Now, Jaylen Brown had a pretty tough game, and he's been remarkable this entire regular season. But just simple stuff, if you're going to double team Embiid and you're on the other side, you can't just sit there and watch Embiid. And he had kind of two defensively that he was assigned to, whether it was VJ in a cut in front of him or Oubre behind him. But he didn't really do anything. He didn't guard either of the guys. He just let Oubre cut behind him. And those are just those plays where I know everybody loses somebody in a box out. Everybody loses somebody in a baseline cut. But when it's collectively like, hey, this entire series has shifted here and you guys need to be a little bit more locked in. And it's like, nah, I don't know. We just take a lot of threes, man. And then after the game, we'll say they're open. I did watch the Mazzulla thing, wondering if he was going to say, like, hey, we have some make or miss thing. Like, we love the shots that we got. I think early on, they should like some of the shots they got that they missed. He didn't say that. Mazzulla was I thought he was great in the post game for Mazzulla. I went into it expecting to be a little annoyed, and I wasn't at all. Everything he said, I was like, okay, that's totally fair. Although I think there was one reporter that was like, you know, game seven, like, who wants it more? And he was like, yeah, couldn't say it any better. He talked about some of the adjustments on the rebounding stuff because it's been a massive advantage for Boston rebounding. It was not the case in game six. And he said that there were some adjustments. He's not going to say what any of those are. He's not going to tell us what his new adjustments are. But when I think about Boston, I think about baseball. And that is, in the regular season, if you have a great manager who's just terrific at managing his bullpen, you can get through a regular season in a way where you might be perceived as being a little bit better than you are. And we've seen this with some other teams in the regular season that are so terrific, just killing you with three-pointers. And then you get into the playoffs and you're like, oh, this is a little different. I think Houston comes to mind, even though they made it to the 18 Western Conference Finals against that Golden State team, which in itself is like an accomplishment. And they, you know, you could argue they shouldn't have blown that series. So I don't necessarily like look at Houston. That's a positive, even though they don't get the award. They don't get to the NBA Finals, and we're not allowed to acknowledge teams that don't make it at least even to the NBA Finals as having like a really nice stretch. But I think long term with Houston, it was kind of like, hey, we do this thing really well. And then when we go to do this, it's just a little bit different. And I'm saying this knowing that Boston's made it to two finals and they have the championship. So it's like, it's one of the weirdest things in my NBA watching of like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I trust these guys to respond. I don't know if there's a messaging issue. I don't know if their like lack of intensity is just them being the same every single day. Like sometimes we applaud the consistency of athletes and teams. Like they don't get too up, they don't get too down. I'd rather them get down then. I'd rather them get a little pissed off after that game six thing and come out game seven with some intensity, because this thing has shifted. One, because I mean, there's a couple different things. Boston is this oddly successful team that I still don't like what they default to offensively. and I can't call it a fatal flaw when it's worked before. Or Boston is an undermanned team that was up 3-1 on a version of Philadelphia that has never really consistently been shown. And now we're getting it here in April and now into May, and that Philly should actually win this series with all of these guys playing at the level they're playing at. Let's get to some questions here. NBA mailbag, rr@gmail.com. We have our guy Cerruti, and we've got two.
We do. Two good ones. This is one I'm excited that there's a follow-up here. This is from Bo again, and he goes, the title is the Cade Tatum follow-up. He goes, hey, guys, I want to apologize that you got any hate from reading my email. Hilarious that no one realized it was an email segment. I guess the funny thing for me is that I feel like even more vindicated after the two losses, since the point I was trying to make is that Cade has no one to rely on. Everyone missed the point of my argument, and I wish I could have spawned an intelligent basketball discussion, but that's probably asking for too much. Anyways, appreciate you guys reading it. Been a longtime fan. Keep up the great work. This is a great point. I thought we were all on the same page talking about the Tatum-Cade thing, and then it became kind of this other thing of us just saying that Tatum was like trash and that Cade was better. The whole point of the argument was just that we thought I was impressed by Cade because he's done a lot with a very little in his NBA career. That was kind of it. That was it. I don't think I would take him in a draft over a healthy Jason Tatum. I just wanted to give Cade his flowers, as the kids say, and it became this weird thing in Celtics Twitter. Everyone got mad.
Yeah, there's like a big segment of Celtics Twitter that's super down on me because they can't figure out what my deal is. Like they don't
can't put Russell in a box.
Yeah, they're like, we thought you loved the Celtics. And then outside of it, I mean, I always say this, like everyone who's a Celtics fan thinks I hate the Celtics, and everybody that's a fan of every other team thinks I love the Celtics. I'll just say, and you can think that I'm lying. I just don't care. All right. Now, when I'm in the building and I'm there for the NBA finals, like I want them to win. You know, I'm happy. I went to the closeout game in 24 because I was living down the street for a little while, and I high-fived my buddy, you know? And by the way, like, even it was a very classic Celtics championship with this group because it was just kind of like, yeah, they won the NBA championship. Like, it's because it was, just felt like a matter-of-fact type of thing. It was almost like void of the emotion that you're supposed to have when your team wins an NBA championship. Granted, that fan base is pretty spoiled, although it had been 16 years since the last one.
Okay, so you kind of did the same thing last year, though, right? They were like weirdly not excited about winning a championship. The players, I should say.
Yeah, but I think the fans, I mean, when you think of that city, and it's not like, you know, that's the kind of city that has that kind of resume. So I actually really liked the email. That's why we read it. And it was more about, I think, one, there were some terrific arguments about what Cade has around him and what Tatum has had around him. Like, it was a ready-made franchise, which I don't think anybody should argue. But somehow, look, man, I mean, to the emailer, welcome to the fucking world of what we do. Like, you got to experience it. Imagine every day that you did something, that's what happened. I mean, it happened again with the Jokic thing. It's why, even as a guy who hosts his own fucking show, I'll see a breakout of me doing it. I just, like, hey, I just taped it 2 hours ago, and then I see my own breakout, and I go, oh, this isn't going to go well. And I deserve more criticism on, like, the Jokic hypotheticals. I could have come up with better examples of what I was talking about with that one. So that one is totally on me, even though I kind of knew. I was like, oh, here we go again. Because there's so many people that hate Jokic for a bunch of different reasons. But the Cade thing was, like, a hypothetical and, like, also factually built the right way of, like, if you wanted to argue Cade, wouldn't you argue these things about the roster thing? And then it turned into, like, again, there's basically any pocket that matters, there's this pocket of Celtics people that are super mad at me for not, like, carrying the banner on every single Celtics topic. And here's the thing, like, I fucking love Tatum. I don't know how that couldn't be more clear. Right. I fucking love him. I just don't ever think he's been inside of that tier one group, even with the NBA championship, which I think has bared out.
I think, and to be fair, I think there is a sensitivity from Celtic fans of, like, hey, we're doing the Tatum thing again. Like, he's not good enough again. And I get that. And but I thought I said many times in that, like, I'm not a Tatum hater.
Well, no one
I
watched like him. Yeah. They looked, I mean, you want to talk about, like, hey, did you read the article? No. Did you read the thing that was there? I mean, even in a podcast, did you listen to a podcast? No. I mean, now it's getting to the point where it's like, did you listen to the actual video? that was the breakout that was on social media that was 2 minutes. It's like, no, I didn't even do that. I just saw the headline. And there's plenty of times, too, with headlines where I don't even like them. And I just did it because I know you shouldn't say it's like what you're fighting against, but you're unfortunately content has become like everything, every message that you're trying to deliver, you're focusing more on defending it than you are making the fucking point.
Right. Well, just to be clear. Yeah. I'm glad you followed up there.
I'm glad you got a taste of it.
That was a worthy email. I already got a taste of it because I got it with Pistons fans yelling at me about the six players in the series thing. And it's like, hey, man, I think you guys could still win the series. I'm just saying this is why I'm mad as a Magic fan because I think we have more talent. But like, you guys are been the better team all year. It's like, nah, you think all these players suck? You're an idiot. It's like, okay, all right, man, sorry. Anyway, nervous about tonight. We won't talk about that. Next one. This, by the way, this came right after game four, so after the Cavs lost to the Raptors and it was 2-2, but we're going to read it now because it's still an interesting email. This is from Zach. Title is Donovan Mitchell. Is he a loser? Yikes. He says, yikes. Why does Donovan Mitchell get a pass when he plays absolutely atrocious? He said he's had some great games in the playoffs, but he's had quite a few piss poor performances. The Cavs should still win the series, but games 3 and 4 were on him and Harden. And I expect that from Harden. I don't expect that from Mitchell. Game 4 was absolutely horrible. The 8-second violation made me blow up. I'm assuming this guy's a Cavs fan. You've been in the playoffs every year of your career and supposed to be the veteran. He does not act like a veteran. I see the same mistakes every year. And why does he always look tired? I don't know about that, but okay. I know the whole Cavs team wasn't great, but I'm blaming him for that game. The Cavs have changed their coach for him. They've made trades for him. They built an entirely new team around him. And he's going to leave if the Cavs lose. The writing is on the wall. But I think he should look in the mirror. I think he's a loser. Man, this is a tough email. I think he's a loser that can't get past the second round. The best thing that ever happened to Rudy Gobert's career was Donovan asking out. 2 conference finals appearances without him. Huge fan of the show. And yes, I'm being a very salty Cavs fan right now. I'm just sick and tired of the same mistakes and seeing the same losses. A championship contender finds a way to win game 4. Regards, Zach. Now, they did win game 5. So I just, with that caveat, is Donovan Mitchell a loser?
You make a compelling argument that he is, and game 5 is pretty damning considering he was on the bench when they put that whole thing together, and he'll have some absolutely terrible shooting performances. And as our emailer correctly points out, like, he's been in the playoffs every single season of his career, but you know, it was a second round exit his rookie year, which again, I loved that team because they took out OKC in 6, to speak to how fraudulent I thought OKC was back then. The other year, Utah, that's the Clippers series, right? Where Paul George, it was like the first time Paul George playoff P. Because remember by the way we used to talk about Paul George as a playoff guy? You're like, I don't trust him at all. it took a little while for Paul. Although there's some good playoff series, I think, there and against Miami going back in the day. And, you know, he's had some shooting performances even in this one where you're like, my God. I mean, you can point to the injuries last year. The Knicks series a couple years ago was like a bit alarming because that was like the first time I was thinking about their double big going, maybe this doesn't work in the playoffs for them. But they stagger those guys out so much. So you could construct a very compelling argument that would back up this point. So I'm not even telling the emailer that he's necessarily wrong. I don't think he's a loser. All right. And I'll do like a really stupid analogy here. When I did the ratings rant of like what's fair and what's unfair about ratings with the NBA, because I just think some of the criticisms, even if you want to criticize the product, which I would agree with you on some of the stuff, a lot of the arguments I thought were pretty unfair while ignoring all the other things that are happening that are almost identical to what's happening in the NBA if you're comparing it to like the 90s. But in buying a live rights package, it might not necessarily be about the overall rating or the trends or what the charts are saying. Is that you have a chance, like if you get a game 7 in the NBA finals, you have a chance to have like 30 to 50 million people watching it, right? And I don't even know if it's 50 million anymore, but even OKC Indiana, I think did 30 million viewers for game 7, despite being one of the worst rated overall NBA finals because it's 2 markets that are just smaller markets. And you knew that overall number was going to be really bad. But maybe you're in the ratings game going, yeah, but if we get a game seven, we can get some kind of number like that in game six or game seven. Like, we're in it. And I was thinking about this when I was thinking about Donovan Mitchell, and that, yeah, I get it. Like, the playoff resume is not good enough for somebody that, if he put together a run, would be considered like a top 10 guy. He's had historically some of the best scoring numbers we've ever seen in the playoffs. But maybe the point is that if you have a Donovan Mitchell, you have a chance for somebody who is just absolutely unguardable for a stretch in the fourth quarter where it's all the difference in the world in some of the stuff that we've seen from him in the past. Now, granted, it's not far enough for people or this emailer, which I completely get. It's not happening in the Western Conference Finals. It's not happening in the Eastern Conference Finals, certainly not the NBA Finals. It's never gotten past the second round. But Mitchell, this sounds like I'm making an excuse for him, but there might be something to, like, okay, but if our guy goes off, goes crazy, we still have a chance to do something that they won't be able to match offensively. But it might be coming. Like, if they lose to Toronto, Cerruti, don't you think it's coming where it's going to be like a lot of, like, there's a checklist of people who be like, hey, what's this offseason narrative going to be, even though I hate that word, where if he doesn't get out of this against Toronto, you know, even I wouldn't be like, hey, it's all Harden's fault, unless, like, Mitchell were to have a great shooting night and score 40 and Harden has a million turnovers and doesn't want to shoot in the second half.
That's the point I was going to make, is it almost felt like Harden was going to be the shield if the Cavs flamed out this year, but it actually doesn't seem like that's going to be the case, which I think, you know, is fair. I've always been a Mitchell guy. I just always love watching him play. And I think he's had, as you said, he could light it up as, you know, up there with anybody at certain times, but... Yeah, there's definitely a question of, like, why aren't you more consistent? I have a little exercise for you quickly if you want to entertain me here. I saw a lot of Knicks fans getting a little mouthy about Cade, and I'll bring this full circle and be like, oh man, you guys were really quick to crown him as the best guard in the East, right? Obviously backing their guy, Jalen Brunson. How would you rank these four guards in the East? Donovan Mitchell, Cade, Maxey, and Brunson. And I'm going to keep Haliburton out of it, obviously, because he's hurt, but, like, he might be one if he's healthy.
Oh, man. Cade is an easy one. Brunson Maxey is really tough.
So Mitchell's four.
Yeah, Mitchell's four.
Clear four. Yeah, I think one, two is clear.
Yeah, but this is one of those things. It's like, oh, you have him last? I'm like, well, depending on the night, I might want Mitchell over any of the guys other than Cade. So I think Maxey, Brunson, and Mitchell are really close. And maybe I'm giving Brunson too much of a lean because I just feel like in some of those huge, huge moments, I trust him the most.
That's why I wouldn't say it's – I would say it's Cade and Brunson 1-2 gap. And then my debate would be between Maxey and Donovan. And I feel like I still – maybe it's dumb and they'll lose the series, but I still feel like I give a slight edge to Donovan. But, like, Maxey could turn out to be the better player.
When I did the top 10 thing, more people mentioned Maxey as, like, a fringe guy than they did Mitchell. But again, it's not like I'm asking the entire league. And people did bring up Mitchell as well. So where's Booker in this?
Well, he's not in the East, so.
No, but I'm just, like, hypothetically.
You and me are Booker stans. So, I mean, you know, I know it's open season to hate on him, but.
But yeah, look, there are times where I think. The lead dog of the team, right? Like, the guy on the franchise, when that team doesn't do well, sometimes the criticism is entirely fair. Like, I'll just bring it back to kind of the beginning. I don't know why anybody should have an issue with Jokic last night. We get it. Like, that's just not how you're supposed to do it. So, like, if you're going to get on Booker's case, in that series, like, what were your expectations for how that series was going to go?
In the season, like, most people thought they were going to be a lottery team. So I don't know, man. Yeah, I'm cool with Booker.
All right, that'll do it for a good 10 minutes. Thanks to Cerruti. Thanks to all the guys behind the scenes. Subscribe and make sure you download the Ryan Russillo podcast, Barstool Sports.